creating a new performing arts center that gives the Symphony and St. Ambrose University a new musical home in the cities. It's being called Building Harmony. St. Ambrose University is partnering with the Quad City Symphony Orchestra to create a new $24 million performing arts center near the foot of the Centennial Bridge, where the old Davenport YMCA once stood. It gives the symphony a place of its own to perform and practice. It gives St. Ambrose University's music program a place to grow. We talk with Symphony Orchestra Executive Director Brian Baxter and St. Ambrose University President Dr. Amy Novak about the plans for the future. This is exciting to talk about a new performing arts center, a $24 million investment. Brian, let's start with you. I mean, Quad City Symphony Orchestra has always been cramped for space. You're kind of journeymen that travel all over the place. You would have a home and you would have a really good concert venue.
Yeah, this is a really wonderful partnership with St. Ambrose University. We're able to have a space that's going to be fully utilized, like all the time. Our needs sort of interlock like a puzzle. For us, it's very much driven by our education programs, which again is another perfect fit with the university. They're nomads, like you said. They're in different spaces for rehearsals every week. Our offices, which are really just built for administrative work, mm-hmm. turn into lesson studios. It becomes hard to have a phone call when there's a new oboe student learning oboe next door to me. So it's not, you know, the space is not built for music, so this is going to be a purpose-built space for music, and it's really going to, it literally puts our programs on a map, right?
I was going to say, it elevates it to mm-hmm. an area that you would think a symphony orchestra should have.
Absolutely, and I think people in the community don't necessarily realize the quality of our educational programming at the Quad City Symphony is on the same level as places much larger than here, you know, Twin Cities, Chicago, you know, all these big metropolitan areas that have robust youth orchestra programs, lesson programs. Ours are just as good here.
Well, it's not just you saying that because you have experience in Chicago. I mean, you worked with the Youth Symphony, mm-hmm. so you do know the capacity and the potential.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we have that here, and our orchestra, our professional orchestra, I think it's the best orchestra in both of our states here in the Quad Cities. Now, of course, I'm biased a little bit, but, you know, we have really high caliber performance programs, education programs. Everything we do is really top notch. So this facility will level up where we do that work so that it matches the quality of our programming.
Why is this something that St. Ambrose was interested in pursuing, a performing arts center, when you already have, you know, Galvin Fine Arts? Why would you need more space?
Well, Galvin Fine Arts is about 60 years old, and it certainly wasn't designed for the type of music that's happening today or the number of students that we currently have in co-curricular music programs across our campus. And so it was on our strategic plan as a space that either needed renovation or a new facility. And as you know, the state of higher education continues to change, and we want to think creatively about how do we better use our space. We're also a Catholic and diocesan institution, and with that comes a mission to be in and of and for our community. So as the symphony started talking about the space, and I began thinking about when they use it, and when we use it, we began to say, could there be synergy if the two of our entities came together? And it's really been exciting to see how complementary our work is, and the usage of the symphony and the times they use it does not tend to be the times that the college and the university mm-hmm. environment uses it. But we can also leverage each other's strengths. You know, there's an opportunity now for our students to have much more direct access to really amazing performers. And similarly, for students in the community to see St. Ambrose as an option for their college education when they reach that age.
Well, and it's fortuitous, of course, because you wonder who was knocking on whose door, where the genesis of this idea came from. You're on the symphony board. So, I mean, was it... Were you on the board for this reason in a way? Were you sitting there going, you know, I could leverage this?
Well, I love music, right? And I see a great deal of joy in music. And I was a symphony subscriber. And so my husband and I met in a choir. There's a long history of music in my family and for me personally. So I was on that because I care deeply about culture and music in the Quad Cities. When this conversation came up, I began thinking about obviously also the efforts we were engaging in at St. Ambrose to really vet the viability of a new structure on our campus. And it just sort of occurred to me, and I went to Brian and we began a series of conversations about would it be possible if the two of us came together? And what could that ultimately look like? And so there's a great deal of due diligence by the board of the symphony, by the St. Ambrose University board. I have removed myself from the symphony board just to avoid any conflict of interest. But as we did the work and we engaged their stakeholders, our faculty members, I mean, it was a robust process of really discerning, could this work? And ultimately, the facility is a little different than I think the symphony would have envisioned for themselves initially, or St. Ambrose would have envisioned. But we have this amazing performance space there, new space for expanded use of our faculty and students who are in those programs, and classroom space that is much more state-of-the-art for the kinds of performances and for the kinds of music education that's really transpiring in our environment today.
And it also allows what's already in Galvin to perhaps a little more breathing.
Gives them some breathing space, yeah. Exactly. I mean, at one point when Galvin was built, St. Ambrose was a college of about 800 to 900 students. Today we're at 2,500. It's a very different campus than it was 60 years ago. And we want the arts to continue to flourish. So we really needed space to make that possible.
This Performing Arts Center, I love the location, first off. I mean,
it's a great location.
It would be at the foot of the Centennial Bridge. For those who don't know, it's where the old YMCA was. Do you picture this as really kind of a cultural jewel for the Quad Cities?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's not another space like this that's going to be acoustically excellent like this anywhere else in the Quad Cities. So it will be unique. It's this incredible convertible space where it can be two orchestra-sized rehearsal rooms and then combined into this 500-seat auditorium. It's going to be really special. And it's going to do a lot for downtown. You know, we're the Quad City Symphony, we've been in downtown forever. St. Ambrose University's been in Davenport forever. I mean, that's a loose term, of course. But we are two institutions, though we're very different, we're fully anchored in the community. So we're not leaving, right? We are here to stay. And so what this is going to do development-wise, as development kind of pushes west in downtown Davenport, mm-hmm. is going to be a really big deal. So we see it as a really important cultural piece downtown, where we have these wonderful, the Figge Art Museum, the German American Heritage Center, the Adler Theater, all of these pieces, and I'm missing some, Common Core, others. So it'll be a really key part of that for not just downtown Davenport, but really the community as a whole.
Well, and I didn't even think of that with the loss of the Kraft Heinz building and that whole area mm-hmm. on the west side, mm-hmm. and the west side doesn't get that much attention, that this is kind of a progression west for the downtown mm-hmm. area.
I suspect it will lead to some nice economic development, right?
Absolutely.
And that's certainly a goal of the city and of the chamber, and as you think about how do we begin to sort of expand the footprint of that west side of Davenport and strengthen that community, I think this is a really nice anchor piece to that.
Symphony Orchestra, I hate to call you journeyman, but you do. You're at Centennial Hall at Augustana. You're at the Adler. You play at different locations. Mm-hmm. How does that impact some of the programs that you have had that were spread throughout the community?
Yeah, and so this won't change our performances at, for example, the Adler Theater. You know, we've been there since it was revisioned in the 1980s, and we'll continue to be there because this facility won't host the super big orchestra stuff that we do. So we'll still be there, but a full third of our programming doesn't happen at the Adler. It doesn't happen at Centennial. And for those, we're like in various spaces. You have to make a lot of different artistic, acoustical compromises to make it work. Everything we do that's not at the Adler and not at Centennial will be there now.
It's a way of expanding then?
Correct.
Not replacing?
Correct.
Let's talk about the exciting year to come, because we have got the Masterwork session starting October 3rd. Mm-hmm. You kick it with an Uncork the Season at the Last Picture Show. Mm-hmm. You've done that in the past. This may be a new location, but you've done that in the past. Mm-hmm. But you're starting with, I'm going to try to get it right, Symphonie Fantastique.
Yes.
Was I close?
Perfect.
Look at me. Tell me about how this season kicks off and why you picked what we're going to see this season.
Sure. So our season opener, October 3rd, there's kind of two big pieces to that. Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique and then Beethoven's Fourth Piano Concerto. And that will feature a Davenport native, Thomas Sauer. He grew up here. He's now in New York City. He's had a whole career in music. And that's a really special piece of music. It's one of Beethoven's, you know, most beloved piano concertos. Beethoven is a favorite of our community. When we put Beethoven on the stage, people want to come out for it. So we're excited to have that. A Davenport native who has an international career combined with Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, which is like an amazing piece. It's great that we're doing it in October because there's some Halloween vibes to it. You know, there's a march to the scaffold. There's, you know, it's an artist journey. We'll put it at that. But it's one of those pieces that people want to see, and it's, you know, it's five movements, it's big, it's epic, it's loud, so it'll be a really fun opener. And then we have our party beforehand at the Last Picture House on the rooftop.
Yeah, because I'm going
to point that out. So that'll be really fun.
For those who are looking for more commercial appeal, perhaps, to the city, I noticed that you have The Lion King, you mm-hmm. have Elf in Concert. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. The Lion King concert is October 24th at the Adler. Elf in Concert is November 21st at the Adler. I like the smile on your face because I know a lot, it's not necessarily traditional symphony orchestra music, but it's another way to reach mm-hmm. the audience.
But it is, in fact.
Please tell me.
Think about your favorite movie and think about it without the music. Like, it's terrible.
You're right.
Like, the music is as important as who is cast in the leading role. It's as important as the script, the visuals if it's an animated film. You know, it's so critical. And so we love bringing these QCSO at the Movies programs to the community because you get to see the orchestra and hear the orchestra perform the score live to the film on the big screen in the Adler Theater. And it's a totally unique kind of experience.
It would be.
It's almost a throwback to, like, back in the day, you know, you had the organist mm-hmm. or whatever do it to the silent film. But now we're, like, bringing it back. Like, this is the orchestra. This is what was put together to bring this incredible movie to life. And, you know, the Disney flicks, we've done several of them, and we always get a huge response. Like, Lion King came out, what was that, 92, 94 maybe. And so all of these, especially folks who grew up with it, mm-hmm. they want to bring their own kids now. And so it's a really fun, kind of very family friendly experience. And then Elf is a similar thing. We'll be kicking off the holiday a little early, right before Thanksgiving. And we're thrilled with that too.
You bring up that of course it's an audience favorite and it really hits a lot of people and their families. What about the musicians themselves?
Sure.
Is this something that they really enjoy, or do they want to be part of more of the classics, like you said, Beethoven, Bach?
Well, I would say the musicians are not a monolith. They all have their preferences and things they enjoy, things they maybe don't enjoy as much. But in my conversations, they're showing up to a gig and they put their whole heart into whatever the music is on the stand. So we actually get a lot of feedback from our musicians that they really enjoy the Lion King, or like in the past we've done Harry Potter or Nightmare Before Christmas, all these different ones. And one of the things they love about it is, even though our Saturday night Masterworks crowd can get a little bit rowdy, I mean orchestra rowdy,
when they're at the...
That's got to be a new term, orchestra rowdy.
When you're at the movie concert, like mm-hmm. there is like loud, like rock concert level applause, and they get that, they give the applause to the orchestra when it's intermission, when it's the end. So like one thing people forget about when you're a performer is that you feed off the energy in the house, and you feed off the energy of the audience. And so when you really hear that, they love that, and they, you know, it helps them to perform.
Is this what you love about performances in the Quad Cities, the vibrancy that still exists with the symphony orchestra? And without organizations such as this, this is a much lesser community?
Look, we're in a really interesting time, right? And so much of our world consumes media via a vehicle, right? Whether it's your phone, your television, whatever that might be. What's terrific about being at the symphony is this is live music, right? And there's just an intimacy in that live production that I think brings people's emotions and energy to a different level. It's an experience that really can't be duplicated by your phone or by another channel. So I think it's exciting to see this kind of partnership. It's what draws me to it. I played myself at one point, you know, and so that you feel that energy of the musician when they're performing, and it's a joy to be part of that experience.
Well, we were talking about the synergy and the collaboration with the symphony orchestra, and with St. Ambrose. And St. Ambrose is really finding different ways of partnership. And I wanted to talk about the Mount Mercy partnership that you have with a college in Cedar Rapids. It is still under development. You're still waiting for federal approval with the Department of Education.
Right. We've made it through, I'm going to say, 90% of the process with the Department of Education. We're waiting for the final approval from them, which we anticipate sometime this fall. But there's been no red flags at all. It's just a matter of the fact that the Department of Education has fewer staff because of all the changes that have happened there. So we have fewer staff, but the regulations are still there. So we just have to go through the process. And but we've had nothing but affirmation, both by our accrediting bodies and by the previous steps that the department approved.
So how do you see this as beneficial for St. Ambrose? I mean, because when we were talking earlier before the camera started rolling, is that you see this really as a win-win. It's not really, I don't know if you want to call it a merger, it's not a takeover in some ways. It's really a true partnership between two successful Catholic institutions.
Yeah, when I think we look at the map of Iowa, right, we can say Cedar Rapids occupies one of the largest growth markets in Iowa today, and Davenport is right behind them in terms of just having population and continued economic growth. We want to be labor force partners to both communities. We think about the future of how does small private higher education thrive and not just survive, because many of our institutions are sort of struggling right now, like type and size institutions. We wanted to be proactive and say, is there a way to think differently about how we organize ourselves so that we can really strengthen the student experience and be a better partner to our communities? And so for us, that meant recognizing we had complementarity in our graduate program. So there were offerings at Mount Mercy that didn't exist at St. Ambrose. There were offerings at St. Ambrose that didn't exist at Mount Mercy. Now we have a capacity, once this merger is complete, to really begin expanding those offerings on both sites. And opening up pathways to our students so that much more quickly they're able, even after year three in some cases, to get into those graduate programs. We also consolidated back office operations, which has resulted in significant cost savings, allows us to simply run our organization more sustainably. And as we think about the future, anything we can do to ensure access for students and affordability for students means we have to think about how do we run more fiscally responsible. And these kinds of, I think, partnerships are going to be key to how we do the best work of our future.
Well, we have just limited time left. One of us three met with the Pope, and it's not something that happens all the time. Because of your significant leadership in regards to Catholic higher education, you were able to meet with the Pope, you were able to talk with papal officials in regards to the future of education, and particularly AI. Is it something that's being embraced, or is it embraced but carefully, because you know of the potential, and perhaps, you know, we're unlocking really a future we don't know?
I think there's two things happening that I would just draw your attention to. The first is in Pope Leo's writing called New Maps of Hope. He embraces the idea of collaboration, and he says we need to think much more intentionally about how we collaborate to strengthen Catholic higher education, if you will, but just our Catholic commitments generally. So within the Catholic context, we have a commitment to human dignity, we have a commitment to justice in our world, we have commitments to ensuring we honor people and respect them, you know, in the ways in which we encounter them, among many things, right? We have a commitment to poverty and to addressing issues that we think strengthen the common good. Magnificat Humanitas, which is this fundamental writing around artificial intelligence, really expands that to say, it's okay to have technology. Technology is not inherently bad, but we want to make sure that when we're using it, it's not demeaning, belittling, or marginalizing communities. That in fact, we're using it in a way, in an ethically responsible way, and we're understanding whose voice might not be part of the large language model that we need to ensure we have listened to or engaged with as we do the work. So to be a responsible Catholic higher education institution today, we have to have a both and approach. We have to embrace the technology, but do so in a manner that is consistent with our intellectual tradition and our Catholic social teaching. And it also reminds us that we don't do this alone. So whether it's the symphony and thinking about live music and collaboration, or it's Mount Mercy and thinking about how we strengthen Catholic higher education. We are really operating in a universe of constellations where we can learn from one another, and we shouldn't be confining that to just, you know, the traditional boundaries of a university. We need to think more broadly about how we do that work.
And that brings us, of course, back to the Performing Arts Center, thinking more broadly. What is the timeline then for this building? It was just announced.
Sure.
What are you hoping will be the schedule moving forward?
Sure. So we are in full fundraising mode. You know, we're in on this 50-50, so we're each bringing half to the table. And so we're anticipating probably 18 to 24 months of fundraising to get to the point at which we can then break ground. So we believe 2028 is when we can break ground, with the understanding that there are milestones we have to hit to get to that. And then 2029, we can open. So it's kind of a 3 to 4 year timeline here.
Doable, obviously, in your opinion, not overly
doable.
Aggressive.
100% doable.
Yeah, and I'm really pleased by, like, there's a lot of community support for this project. It's been exciting to hear people's embrace of this.
Yeah. Well, we thank both of you for being here. It was a wide-ranging conversation. We appreciate your time, but you're both so interesting, and I wanted to make sure that I got into topics other than the Performing Arts Center, which, of course, is a key to the future. And as we were saying, it could be a huge economic developer on the west side of downtown.
Mm-hmm. It will be.
It will be. We think
it'll
be a big impact.
Our thanks to Quad City Symphony Orchestra Executive Director Brian Baxter and St. Ambrose University President Dr. Amy Novak. The month of August is coming to a close, but there are still some great summertime events to enjoy around the cities. And here's a couple ideas for you, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start your week off by watching the classic movie Wizard of Oz come to life on stage. Then all seniors ages 60 and up will receive free admission to the Figge Art Museum, as well as 10% off in the museum store. Next, help restore the historic Jens Jensen landscape with native plants at the Hauberg Estate. Then explore fields of flowers at Dandy Flowers, nestled just outside the charming town of Aledo. Finally, check out an outdoor celebration of culture, diversity, strong neighborhoods, and families at Soul of the City. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Lojo Russo has a busy schedule of concerts in the coming weeks, including a planned West Coast tour in November. But this one-woman show will be performing in Illinois and Iowa in the coming weeks as well. We caught up with her when she played one of her originals at the Black Box Theater in Moline. That's where she took to the stage to play The Secret.
A lot of my songwriting is based on snippets of melody that kind of run in my head, or something that I say, and then I realize that's got like a rhythm to it, a scansion, and I'll kind of play with that rhythm a little bit and see if anything else grows out of it. More often than not, I'm playing around on the guitar and just kind of popping through some different stuff, and this little pattern on the guitar starts up.
Penny on the sidewalk, pick it up, down in my pocket, give it up. Reaching out to a stranger, lend a hand, letting him try to understand, yeah. Thank you.
song based on a book I never read, The Secret. But I knew the premise of it, the overarching idea of putting good out in the universe, and the universe will bring the good back into your life. So that's the secret. Trying to remember that negativity is a waste of time. Giving up finding a penny on the floor and picking it up, but when you see somebody in need, you give a dollar back. It's not this one-to-one kind of give and take. It's always trying to just give and give and give and remember all the good stuff that we are thankful for. So penny on the sidewalk, pick it up, dollar in my pocket, give it up, give it up.
Lojo Russo and The Secret performed at the Black Box Theater in downtown Moline. She has concerts scheduled in Kelowna, Iowa and Galena, Illinois in the coming weeks, and she'll also be at Riversance in Lindsay Park coming up in late September. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.